Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shavuos Daf Chof Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins from the top line of Daf Chof Vov. We quote from the Mishnah, Rabbi Shmuel Oimer Eino Chayov Elo Al Heosid Lovo. We spent a great deal of time on this topic in our previous shiur, where we saw the Machlokas Rebbe Yishmael versus Rebbe Akiva, which will be the topic of the opening Tanaic source that we'll see very shortly, concerning what defines a Shavuos Bitui. What elements are necessary in order for it to be to constitute and for a vow or for an oath to constitute a Shavuos Bitui? Shavuos Bitui, as we mentioned in our previous year, is just one of several different kinds of oaths. Not all of them have the same outcome if one is found to be in violation. So it's important for us to define what are the elements that make up a Shavuos Bitui, a vow, an oath of utterance. And on this topic, we have this machlokas. And on the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, the Nosei Makoros. We're going to see sources, the machlokas Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Shmuel, Binyan Shavuos Bitui, regarding this kind of oath, the oath of utterance. Rabbi Akiva Chayev holds, Chayev Gam Al Lishavar. Even if the text of the oath is a past tense, for example, someone swears, I ate a sandwich. That's in the past. And it turns out that he is lying. He is said to be in violation of a Shavuos Bitui. Rabbi Shmuel Chayev Rak Al Lehabo. Rabbi Shmuel says that one is Chayev, one is in violation of a false Shavuos, of a Shavuos Bitui, in violation of a vow of utterance only if it concerns something of a future nature. Or a person, let us say, swears that he will not eat something and then again ends up eating it. Dumya de Lahara Olahitiv. Based on the verse in which you see the expression La'aleitiv, and we quote the relevant pasuk on the side of the Gemara, you can see we quote it here as we did in our previous year as well. It reads, and we've written it on the side, Oy nefesh ki si shova levate b'sfasayim lehora o lehitiv lechol asher yivate odom shvua v'nelam mimenu v'hu yoda v'oshem lachas me'ele. Now we go to the Gemara, and we deal with the issue of sources for their respective opinions. Tanu Rabbanan, Lahara Lehitiv. That is taken from the pasuk that we just read. The translation of Lahara Lehitiv might be to deprive, which Lahara literally is to make something bad. It has to do with deprivation, or Lehitiv to benefit. Ein li elod varam shiyesh bohen harav v'tova. If I were to stick to the literal reading of the pasuk, I would say that that oaths are considered oaths only if they have an element of something either a deprivation or benefit. What about something neutral? She'ein bohen haro v'hatova minayin. How do we know that an oath of that nature, something that's neutral, would also constitute a shvua? Talmud lomar oy nefesh ki si shava levate b'sfasayim. So from this expression that we see in the pasuk, it's deemed that include neutral matters as well. Ein li elo lahabo. So far, I would say that only if the text of the oath is of a future nature, as the grammar indicates, lahora o lahitif, lishavar minayin. What about a vow that is an oath that's of a past tense nature? Talmud lomar l'chol asher yivate ha'odom b'shivua divrei Rabbi Akiva. This is Rabbi Akiva's approach, who includes even past tense by virtue of this ribui, this inclusionary phrase l'chol asher yivate ha'odom b'shivua. Rabbi Shmuel Omer. And now we go to Rabbi Shmuel, who is a, you'll find, a more limited approach to what constitutes, what qualifies as a Shuas Bitui. So Rabbi Shmuel says, Lahara Leitiv is Lahaba, future. Omar lo Rabbi Akiva, im kain, if you're limiting vows or oaths to a future tense, then im kain ein li elo dvarim sheish bohen hatova v'hara, then according to you it would be only vows that have either the hatova or hara nature, something beneficial or detrimental. Dvarim she'ein bohen hara v'hatova minhayin. What about neutral matters that are not either detrimental or positive? Omar lo mi ribui hakosuf. So Rabbi Shmuel says from the inclusionary expression of l'chol asher yivate ha'adam. Well, omar lo im ribo hakosuf l'kach, ribo hakosuf l'kach. If you're willing to see the pasuk as inclusionary, so if it's going to include the neutral, let it include also the past. Now, the Gemara points out, shapir kromalei Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Shmuel. It would appear from this give and take that Rabbi Akiva has the last word, so to speak, and he's saying, Shapir means saying well. He's saying, he's presenting a strong argument to Rabbi Shmuel. Why then does Rabbi Shmuel not go so far as to include the past tense type oath as a Shvuas Bitui? Omar Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan answers that these Tanoim, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva, received traditions from their respective teachers. And the traditions that they received in how to expound on verses is differing. Is an approach that differs from one another. Rabbi Shmuel, Shishimesh es Rabbi Nechunya ben Akona. Rabbi Shmuel, who Shimesh literally means he served, but it means he studied by Rabbi Nechunya ben Akona, Shoyodorish is Kol HaTorah Kula B'Klal Uprat, who used the Klal Uprat method of verse expansion, Ihunami Dorish B'Klal Uprat. Rabbi Shmuel adopted his Rebbe's, his teacher's approach, and also uses the Klal Uprat method. Now, we're not going to translate the terms Klal Uprat. We could translate them literally, though it has no meaning. It's more important later to see how we apply these rules. Klal uprat, klal is a general, and prat is something specific. So when you have a verse that has in it phrases, some of which are general and some of which are specific, you then have a certain type of method of what to do with that, what to conclude from that, what to include, what to exclude in terms of your final conclusions. Rabbi Akiva, Shishimesh es Nochom Ish Gamzu, Rabbi Akiva, who studied by this individual, Nochom Ish Gamzu, this Tana, Shohoyo Doresh es Kol HaTorah Kula B'Riba U'Miyot, who had a different approach. He used the Ribui U'Miyot method. Ribui is that which is inclusive, Miyot is that which is excluded. Ihunami, so Rabbi Akiva as well, Doresh Riba U'Miyot. And now the Gemara presents the two approaches and how and their results. And you can see we've used diamonds to highlight the names Rabbi Akiva and then Rabbi Yishmael. My Rabbi Akiva, the Dorish Ribui Umiuti, what is the teaching of Rabbi Akiva in this context of the Shuas Bitui that darshans the Pasuk in the Ribui Umiut fashion? Desanya, O Nefesh Kisi Shova, a person when he swears. What kind of swear? Well, it's a very general expression. So, ribo, it comes to be inclusive of a lot. Lehara leitiv miyet. And now you see that the pasuk has a limitation. Not necessarily everything, but rather those kind of oaths that are detrimental or positive. But then the pasuk goes on with an inclusive expression. Lechol asher yivate adam. Lechol means everything that a person expresses. Chozar v'ribo. So you have this ping-pong type approach, or give-and-take style posuk. So what do you do with this? You have ribo, umie v'ribo. What is the result of that? Ribo hakol, in effect, include everything. All kinds of oaths of utterance will fall under the category, the definition of a shvuas bitui. my riba. Well, what are you including? Riba kol milin, all kinds of oaths. Umay miyet, so what's excluded? Miyet devar mitzvah. Rabbi Akiva will acknowledge that a person who swears to, let us say, to do a mitzvah or to violate a mitzvah, that does not constitute a shvuas bitli. So something is excluded. Something is, let's say, is gained, or if I don't know if that's the right expression, but something is derived from the fact that you have an exclusionary expression. In the pasuk, we exclude one point. But otherwise, we're including all kinds of oaths, even those that are of a past tense nature. Rabbi Shmuel Dorish Klal Uprat. Rabbi Shmuel's approach is different. As we said before, he approaches it using the Klal Uprat method. And we have again the same pasuk quoted, O nefesh kisi shava levate besvasayim. That's a general expression, that's a klal. And lehara lehitiv prat, that's a detail. And lechol asher yivate ha'adam, this is in turn a general, chozar v'kolal, it's a general expression. Klal upratu klal, iyatodon elokein haprat. When you have this type of setup, so we say that we're willing to include something beyond the literal meaning of the pasuk, but what we will include, it has to be similar to the prat, similar to the detail that's mentioned. Ma haprat mefurosh lahabo, just like the detail, the prat, and in this case that's the lahara lehitiv expression, is of a future tense. Afkol lahabo. So too, any oath of utterance that's of a future tense will be considered as shvuas bitui, obviously to the exclusion of a past tense oath. And now the Gemara analyzes or breaks this down a little further. Ahani klolo la suyafu dvarm she'en v'hem harov atova lehabo. The klal, the general expression that is found in this pasuk, is effective in including beyond the pasuk itself, which had lahara leitiv mentioned. It includes even things that are neutral, that aren't detrimental or positive in the content of the oath. Ahani prata limute, the prat is coming to exclude afil dvarim sheishmem harova tova l'sha'ovar. We are going to exclude anything that is of a past tense nature, even if the content is either haroa or atova. For example, if a person were to swear, haroa would mean detrimental, something that he swears that he did not eat, but it's in the past tense. The non-eating is called haroa, deprivation or detrimental. Atova would be in the lishavar, that I did eat something, and he turns out to be lying about that. According to Rabbi Shmuel, this will not be considered a shvuas bitui, because it's lishovar, it was a past tense nature. The Gemara's epuch ano, maybe switch things around and say that the pasuk, the prat is coming to exclude the neutral things of a future nature, and we're going to come to include things that are past, as long as it has in it haroah hatova. The Gemara answers, Omar Rabbi Yitzchok, dumyo de laharoah de lahara lehetiv. In order to come to the conclusion, we emphasize that which is similar to lahara lehetiv. Mi sheisuro mishum bal yachel devaro. The Rashi explains on the fourth line from the top, Lo yachel devaro, lo mashma elo bedover she'efshur lo lekayim shvuaso. The pasuk says, "Thou shall not violate your word." When you speak in terms of thou, a commandment not to violate your word, you're implying something that is in your hands to fulfill. That's of a future nature. So the pasuk warns us not to violate our words, so that we're limiting ourselves to something that's of a future nature. Yotzazu, to the exclusion of the past tense, sheni suru mishum bal yachel devaro, the a person who, lies concerning something of a past tense nature, he's not in violation of that. Elo mishum baal tishakru. That's covered by another violation, which is found in Vayikra, in the Sefer Vayikra, Perek Yutes, Posuk Yud Aleph. So that just like lohara o lehetiv is of a future nature, we have lo yachel devaro, which is a future nature. It's a pasuk in Bamidbar Perek Lamed Pasuk Gimel, which speaks about one who swears lo yachel devaro, someone who has in his power to fulfill something had better fulfill it and not violate that which he accepted. That's as well as a future nature. So how do I know, according to Rabbi Yitzchok, to include that which though is neutral but is of a future nature? It's because the prat in our pasuk lo ra'a leitiv is based on the similarly future pasuk of lo yachel devoro, so that you may have sworn something of a neutral nature, but it's something in your power to fulfill, something in the future, to the exclusion of something of harova tova, but of a past tense that isn't similar to the lohara ulehetiv phrase in our shvuas bitui pasuk. Something in the past tense, one who is lying, so he is bound by the other pasuk that we made reference to in Vayikra Perek Yutes, and just a correction from before, pasuk Yud Beis. We continue with a second answer to the question of Epul Chano, Reb Yitzchok Bar Oven Omar, Omar Kro. The pasuk said, O nefesh ki si shava levatei bisfosayim. And here the emphasis is on the order of the words. Mi shehashvua kedemes labitui. Who is spoken about in this pasuk? Someone whose vow or whose oath, whose shvua precedes whatever was expressed. In other words, first the vow and then the fulfillment of the expression that is a reference to something that you will do in the future. And not a reference to a bitui, an expression of facts of something that had been in the past that you are now only later swearing about. Yotzozet, to the exclusion of an oath of achalti, I ate, or lo achalti, or I didn't eat. Shahamaisa, where the facts, the events, kodem l'shvua, took place already before your oath of right now. So as far as how it's clear to Rabbi Shmuel that the klal is going to include even the neutral type oath, but as long as it is in the future tense, so you have Rabbi Yitzchok's approach and Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Ovin's approach. We continue now in the Gemara Tana Rabbanan, again a quote from the pasuk that we featured earlier, Vayikra Perek Hei Pasuk Dalid, Ha'adam Bishvua. The pasuk had said, "L'chol asher yivate Ha'adam Bishvua." Prat le'onus. This expression of Ha'adam Bishvua, it means you have to be a man about your oath. What does that mean? You have to be a man about it. You have to be aware before you violate it. You have to be aware that you're violating an oath. Prat la'onus. This is to the exclusion of someone who is unaware. Whose la'onus literally is beyond your control. But we'll see an example of that later. The pasuk said v'ne'elam. Pasuk said v'ne'elam imenu. Prat l'mezid. That when you're violating the shvuas bitui, it has to be a situation where it's unintentional, where you're to the exclusion of someone who knowingly violates his oath. Mimenu, that's also a word from the pasuk. Shenis alma mimenu shvua. The pasuk is featuring someone from whom it was hidden the fact that he had taken an oath, meaning he forgot about it. Yochol shenis almo mimenu chayfetz. Could it be that someone who forgot the focus, the item concerning which he was swearing. He also forgot about the chayfetz, the item. Tamad lomar b'shvua v'ne'elam. Al helim shvua hu chayav einu chayav al helim chayfetz. He is chayav when he's chayav as a violator of the shvua's bitui, which results in the bringing of a sacrifice only if he forgot the shvua, the fact that he had sworn concerning the matter, but not we don't have an obligation or korban requirement for someone who forgot the object. All of these points will be the subject of the Gemara as we continue down through the rest of this Omid. Omar Mar, and a quote from what we just read by Ha'odom Bishvua Prat La'onus. The person has to be aware that he had vowed at the time that he is swearing. He has to be fully aware, not someone who is onus. Hey Chidomi, can you give me an example of someone who swears and he is onus? The answer is, we have an example. Kid Rav Kahana Rav Asi, Ki Avukaimi Mekame Derav, Rav Kahana Rav Asi, who studied both at the feet of Rav, so that when they finished their study session with Rav, and they would then study with one another, and an argument may ensue between Rav Kahana and Rav Asi. Mar Omar, one would say, Shvuasa Dahochi Omar Rav. I swear that Rav said this. Umar Omar, the other one would say, no, Shvuasa Dahochi Omar Rav, and say to the contrary. Then he swore or swears the other way. Ki Osu Lekame Derav, Omar Kichab Inayu. Then when they would come to Rav again, and Rav would say, like one of them, Omar Leidoch, the other one would say, Vano b'shikra shtaboy. Does that mean that I swore falsely in my saying with that which turns out to be not that which Rav really said? Omar Le, so Rav answers, don't worry. Libcha anoscha. And here you see the word onus. It's your heart caused you to say what you did falsely. In other words, you at the time that you swore, you really believed that to be the case. You weren't swearing falsely. You weren't uttering a lie at the time. At the time that you said what you said, you were totally convinced that what you were saying was the truth. So that is not considered a violation of a shvuas bitui. Why? Because it lacks the element of ha'adam b'shvua, a man being fully aware of the reality. In their case, he wasn't fully aware of the reality. The drasha said before v'ne'ala mimenu, Shinisala mimenu shvua. There was hidden from him the oath. Yochol shinisala mimenu chayfetz. Could it be that he's guilty of a shvuas bitui if he forgets the item that was the subject of his oath? Tamad lomar b'shvua v'ne'elam mimenu. Al helem shvua hu chayav v'eino chayav al helem chayfetz. So that's a Tanaic source. As it appeared before, and now we analyze. Machku alei b'marova. Machku is they laughed in Marova in Eretz Yisrael. They laughed, they jeered, they ridiculed this particular teaching, this source. In other words, they felt that it simply was an inaccurate source. And now the analysis. Why? Bishlamo shvua mishkachas lo b'lo chayfetz. I can envision a person who is ne'elam mimenu shvua, but is aware of the chayfetz. Kagon, and here we see a practical example. And by the way, you can see we've noted this as a long question. It's essentially the ma'arova, the people, the rabbis in Eretz Israel, and their criticism of this source. So they say, Bishlamo shvua mishkachas lo b'lo chayfetz. I can imagine and envision a case of someone who forgets the fact that he swore, but did not forget the item. Kagon di Omar, a man says, Shvua shelo ochal pas chitim. A man swore in reality that he will not eat some wheat bread. The Kosovar, and he thought she'ochal ko'omar. He thought that he swore that he will eat. That he swore in the positive. Dishvu'ase inshi means forgot. Chepsa dochir. Dochir means remembered. In this example, you have someone who essentially forgot his oath and remembered the item. Elo chefetz below shvua. What does it mean to forget the item and not forget the oath? Hechi domi. Well, what might that be? Kegon de Omar, shvua shelo ochal paschitin. Man swore that he will not eat wheat bread. The kosovar shel soirim ko Omar. And he thought that his oath was not to eat barley bread. De shvuose dochirle, chetzo inshi. He remembers the shvua. The shvua was not, he swore not to eat. And the item, the subject of the oath, was forgotten. However, the problem is, kevon dechepso in shile, if you forget the subject, hainu helem shvua. Forgetting the subject is tantamount to forgetting the entire oath. You can't separate the two. You can't describe someone who forgets the subject of something and not have it being the equal of forgetting the oath itself. Therefore, the Marova objected to the source, the way it was presented. The source presenting a possibility of forgetting one without forgetting the other. So that when it came to the suggestion in the source of someone who is ne'elam imenu chefetz, which is not ne'elam imenu hashvua, that is, in the Marova's mind, an impossibility. On the side of the Gemara, we have a reference to the upcoming marking scheme. You see the trapezoid or volcano shape. Under the Mivneh heading on the side, we indicate this is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the give and take structure. So that, as we say, we have this back and forth structure where the inverted shape represents kushios, they represent questions. So the Gemara now continues. Elo Omar Rebbe Elozer. Do v'do achas hi. They are one in the same. We take a look at the Rashi. Achas hi. I ato moitse. You cannot find helim chefetz below helim shvua. Vizu hi eino mishnah, and the source that we read is simply an inaccurate source. As we said before, the source tried to present the two elements as separate elements. They are not so, and hence the source is inaccurate. Maskif lo Rav Yosef almo chefetz below shvua lo mishkachas lo v'ho mishkachas lo. Rav Yosef says, how can you say what you did? Are you saying then that the concept of forgetting the chefetz, forgetting the item, the subject of the vow, while at the same time remembering that you had vowed, that cannot be, but it can be. Kegon di Omar, shvua shelo ochal pas chitin. Person swore not to eat wheat bread. V'hoishit yodo l'salito pas sorin. And he had extended his arm into a basket, with the intention of taking from the basket barley bread. The also biyodoi shochitim. And lo and behold, wheat bread fell into his hand. The kosovur se'orim hi. The man thought, though, that this was barley bread. The ochla, and he ate it. The shvuasa dochile, this man was fully cognizant of his oath. Chefzahu delo yodale, the item he was unaware of. Omar le Abaye, klum chayvis le korbon elo a mai de tofis biodei. Is it not so that we are coming to obligate him in bringing a sacrifice only because of that which is in his hands? What's in his hands? Wheat bread. He is not allowed to eat that by virtue of what? The oath. Helam shvuahu. This is, in effect, someone who is unaware of the oath. So as a result of being unaware of the oath that he had taken not to eat this, and he goes in and eats what? He eats the wheat bread that's in his hands. He'll have to bring a sacrifice. So what you, Rav Yosef, suggested as we'll say separating the chafetz from the shvuah, that you cannot do that. You can't separate the two. Lishno achrino, another version, Omar le Abaye Rav Yosef. Sof sof, the end of the day, korban de komaisi alo de high pas nihas elim shvuahu. The korban, the sacrifice that he will be bringing, is because of the bread that's in his hands, and that is something, that bread, meaning the wheat bread that's in his hands, is something concerning which he forgot that he had sworn over it. We take a look at the Rashi, alo dahai pas she'ochal. The sacrifice that he would be bringing is because of the bread that he ate. The gabi dahai pas, and regarding this bread, the wheat bread, helam shvuahi. Here you have the shvuah being hidden or escaping from him. Kosovar shalonish ba'aleha. He thought he didn't swear about this. Sherei sovur shi shalsvarim. He shalsvarim. He thought it was barley bread. The Rav Yosef Omaloch, Rav Yosef responds though. He says, Kevan dechi yoda le dechitinhu porish minei. At the moment that he would become aware that it's wheat bread, he would stop. Helem chefetzu. That's a sign that that which is governing his behavior is the fact that he forgot or was unaware of the item. Not the fact that he's unaware of the oath. We continue with a new marking scheme. On the side, you see a house shape, Ba'ar Mineh. We highlight questions that will appear. And you'll see these questions are Rava Merav Nachman, which we highlighted with a double underline. So you'll see, as the Gemara unfolds, we have a few of these questions of Rava asking for Rava Nachman, and we continue on Amud Beis, the marking scheme with house markings with Bo Amineh, and then we'll see another question. But that the next one, that is on Amud Beis. In the middle, you have Bo Amineh Ravina Me Rava. So the Gemara continues four lines from the bottom. Bo Amineh Rava Me Rav Nachman Herelem Ze Veze Biyodo Mahu. Imagine someone who is unaware of the item, as well as being unaware of the fact that he had sworn. Omerle, so Rav Nachman says, Hare helem shvua biyodo v'chayev. Well, here you have someone that's unaware of the fact that he had sworn, and he goes ahead and violates that, then discovers he in fact violated his oath, so he's chayev, he has to bring a sacrifice. Adarabba, well, to the contrary, Hare helem chayfetz biyodo v'potter. In accordance with the drosha we saw before, and certainly something that Rav Yosef liked, you have someone who is unaware of the item, and that type of unawareness is reason for exempting him from the sacrifice. Upotar, and that means exempt. Omar Ravashi, Chazinos Ravashis, let us evaluate the situation. This guy, who is right now Helem Zevezeb Biyodoy, Imachmas Shvua Kaporish, if he were to be told, you know, you swore concerning this. You swore not to eat this. And upon hearing the fact that he swore, that would cause him to desist. Arehelem shvur biyodo v'chayev. That would show us that it's the forgetting of the oath that is responsible for his continuing action, and therefore he would be chayev to bring the sacrifice. Imach mas chefetz kaparsh. If he were told, hey, you know, you're holding, you had sworn not to eat wheat bread, you're holding wheat bread. And if upon hearing that it's wheat bread, he would stop is Shavua, he would stop eating. So there we see this person as being tricked or forgotten the item. Omale Ravina la Ravashi. Ravina critiques this Rav Ashi analysis, and he says, "Klum parish mishvua ela mishum chayfetz, klum parish mishayfetz ela mishum shvua." When we speak about a person desisting, if he's desisting upon hearing about the oath, it's only because the oath concerned this particular item, or if he desists because of the particular item. Because of the discovery of the identity of this particular item, he's desisting, he's separating himself from it only because he had sworn over it. Ela lo shna. And Rashi adds the key point, and he says upoter. So Rashi says that in the case of Helen Zev Zev Yodo, and then he finds out he violated his oath, he will be potter, exempt from bringing the sacrifice. Bo mine Rava mirav Nachman. No. We see another question. Rava presents Rav Nachman. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Ezo hi shigigas shvuas bitui l'sha'avar. What is meant by that expression? Rashi at the top adds Ezo hi shigigas shvuas bitui l'sha'avar. Kefan de bo'inon, since we require odom b'shvua, that a person has to have a certain level of awareness, and not the case of onus that we described before. So heichi mishkachas lo shogeg. What then is the definition of shogeg? The Gemara continues with its query. E diyada, if the person is aware that he had sworn concerning this item, and he goes ahead and violates it anyway. Mesidhu, so he's an intentional violator. He wouldn't bring a sacrifice. E delo yoda, if he's unaware. Onusu, then he is onus. It's, as we saw before, it's something that he thought at the time that he was doing something completely legitimate. And he's therefore exempt from bringing a sacrifice upon a discovery of a violation. Omar Lay, so Rav Nachman answers, Bi Oimer, we're describing a case of Shigigas Shuas Bitui, namely this element of unintentional violation resulting in a sacrifice, Yodeani Shishvua Zua Sura. I know that this Shvua, that the oath is creates prohibition. Aval Eini Yodea Im Chayavim Aleo Korban Oilav. But I wasn't aware whether the violation of this oath would result in my having to bring a sacrifice. Keman, according to whom, on a Tanaic level, according to whom would this analysis hold true? Namely, that unawareness of sacrificial obligation with regard to oath violation constitutes shogeg. The Gemara answers kemunbaz. This is an opinion that would conform to the that of munbaz. That's his name. The Omar that says shigigas korban shmo shgoga. So are we to assume right now then that our teaching that you have to, in order for a person to be guilty of a bringing a sacrifice for violating a shvuas bitui would be shigigas shvua. And a shigigas shvua, let me explain that again, that it, are we then to then assume that what constitutes a shigigas shvua, what constitutes the element of shogeg is simply the unawareness that shvua violation could result in a sacrifice? Well, that would be like a minority opinion, like an individual opinion. Is that really so? The Gemara says, no, afilu tema rabbonon. Even the rabbonon who argue with munbaz, that's ad kan lo pligi rabbonon leita munbaz, ela b'chol ha-Torah kula. There is an argument between them concerning awareness of sacrificial obligation for a variety of Torah violations, that's true with regard to the rest of the Torah. The lav chidushu, the rest of the Torah, doesn't represent something of a, we'll say, of a novel nature, something that's a departure from the norm. Aval hocha, but when you're dealing with the realm of shvuos, the area, the topic of shvuos represents a chiddush, and as a result, just skip, if you skip the bracketed section, just skip the 2-3 lines here, you end up reading afilu rabbonon modu. Even the rabbonon will concede to munbaz that lack of awareness of sacrificial obligation constitutes shogeg. So you have something quite amazing. You have someone who is about to violate an oath that he took, and he's aware that he's violating the oath, but he's not aware that unintentional oath violations could result in a sacrifice. So that element of knowledge is lacking from him. He is called shogeg, and as a result, he'll bring a sacrifice. Now let's go over the bracketed section in which the Gemara points out what constitutes the chiddush of shvuos, the novel aspect of shvuos. The bechol haTorah kulo lo ashkichon lav the maisi korban the alfinun me'avodah zorah. In the rest of the Torah, the violation of, we'll call it, a mere negative command, those commands that don't carry with them the kores penalty, we don't find those kind of violations bringing sacrifices. The alfinu me'avodah zorah means we derive the standard by which you bring sacrifices from the laws of idolatry. What's the nature of idolatry? It's a type of violation that when done intentionally, he would be obligated, he would be chayev kores, or court execution if they're witnesses, but it's something that carries with it a potential kores penalty. And the Torah, when speaking about avodah zorah, it speaks about idolatry, it's tantamount to the violation of the rest of the Torah. So the rest of the Torah is compared to idolatry. And what do we know about idolatry? We know that when you violate it unintentionally, you bring a sacrifice. So the rest of the Torah has that as its standard for when you bring a sacrifice. That kind of offense that would carry with it, when done intentionally, kores. However, when you come to the topic of oath violation, it doesn't carry with it a kores punishment. And yet, the Torah says that one who violates oaths, shvuos bitui, he does bring a sacrifice. So as a result of that, the Rabbanan will agree with Munbaz that one is considered shogeg when, even if he knows that he is in violation of the oath, but nevertheless he's not aware of this sacrificial aspect, he is considered a shogeg. Bo mine ravino me rovo nishba al kikor umistakin olehomahu. Ravina asks of Rava, a person swore not to eat a loaf, and he became dangerously ill. In other words, in order to alleviate his problem, he would have to eat from the loaf, but he swore not to eat it. What's the din? The Gemara asks, "Mistakein, you're talking about someone dangerously ill. Sakona means he's in danger. Lishri leimor." The Rashi says, "Lishri leimor v'kevon diatol diosel kamon sharinon le lechatchila ki ochil le behelim shvulo over al shvuoso." If someone like this were to come to us with a question, I swore not to eat this loaf, but I'm dangerously ill. Can I eat it? We would matir the neder. We would undo. We would annul the oath. If someone in a situation like this, he didn't seek out annulment, but he ate it as a result of being dangerously ill. So he is innocent. He is not considered as having violated the oath. Elo mitzta'er v'ochlo b'shigiga shvua mai. Rashi, mitzta'er b'ra'ov or badover, someone was feeling pain, extreme discomfort. V'inami lo nelmo mimenu hoya ochla. We're describing someone that even if he was aware that he swore not to eat it, he would have eaten it anyway. V'ochla b'shoigeg behelem shvuah, and the question that Ravina is asking, after describing the person that would have eaten it, even if he was aware of his oath, we're now describing someone that was, in fact, not aware. He forgot that he had sworn. What is the din? So all of that is what you have to read into these very few words of Gemara. The question, though, is clear. Someone who would have eaten it anyway, had he known, even had he known that he had sworn, he eats it, forgetting about the oath, not remembering the oath. What is the din? Omar lei, so Rava answers, Tanina, you can answer your question from the following source. Shav miyadiyoso mevi korban ashigigoso. Someone who, upon being informed of his error, would have desisted. Someone like that brings a sacrifice for atonement of his sin. Lo shav miyadiyoso ein mevi korban al shigigoso. Someone who, however, with being informed that there was a sin at hand, would not have turned away, would not have desisted, but rather would have violated it anyway, he does not bring a korban, even though right now he is unaware of the sin aspect. Of this, in this case, he's unaware that he had sworn not to eat the loaf. Before we continue further in the Gemara, we glance at the side. We have a Nosei topic heading, Dino Shel Shmuel. Shmuel's teaching Shmuel's law. Gomar Belibo Lishova. A person concluded that he wants to swear. Tzorach Shiyotzi B'Sfosov. In order for the oath to be an oath, he has to actually utter it. The Gemara, Omar Shmuel, Gomar Belibo, Tzorach Shiyotzi B'Sfosov, Shneamar Levate B'Sfosayim. The pasuk itself that deals with oath says that it is an oath because he levate, he articulated, he pronounced it with his lips. The triangle that you see is explained on the side under the Mivneh, the structural heading, with the point facing up. First of all, we're dealing with a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track. If you skim ahead, you see how the triangles appear in alternating directions. So the point facing up represents kushus al Shmuel, challenges, questions on Shmuel, and the inverted indicates tshuva's responses. Now, as we turn back to the Gemara text, you might note that immediately after the word meisve, we have a bracketed section. The purpose of the brackets are for initial skipping. Within the brackets, the Tanaic source that is quoted initially undergoes repair, undergoes correction or change. So the main focus, though, when raising a question here against Shmuel, is that which appears after the bracketed section. So let's skip initially, realizing that we have, an opening part of the source that needs correction, but the continuation of the source, which you find after the brackets, is of immediate relevance to us. So we're saying Meisve, we're asking a question, B'Sfasayim. That is taken from the Pasuk. V'lo shigomar b'liboy lahotzi b'sfasa v'lahotzi. The Pasuk describes an oath that is uttered. Someone like that who violates it would be chayev to bring a sacrifice, but not the following, not someone who gomar b'libo lahotzi, means he concluded, he expressed his willingness, it was internally, he thought to utter a vow and didn't. Someone like that is not considered as having made a vow. Gomar b'libo stam minayin, someone who concluded in his heart to vow, but didn't conclude to utter it with his lips. The person thought internally that he's going to accept as a vow whatever. How do we know that that too is considered a real oath? Talmud loymar l'chol asher yevate. What do we see? Ela l'shmuel kashya. Here we have a difficulty for Shmuel, because if you notice that which we dashed underlined, beliboi stam minayin, that means someone who internally concluded that he wants to swear that that's enough, his internal conclusion is enough without the utterance. That is a problem for Shmuel. Following this, the inverted triangle introduces the response, the answer to that. We'll get to that shortly. Let's go back over the bracketed section now. Mesve, Bisfosayim, Velo Belev, Gomar Belibo Minayin. So the initial statement means Bisfosayim means something that you uttered. The Pasuk said, O Nefesh Kisishava Levate Bisfosayim. Something that you uttered. That constitutes a vow, or constitutes an oath. And not mere internal conclusions, internal swearing. That's what velo belev. Now, the source goes on to say, gomar belibo minayin, and from where do we know that someone who internally decides that he is swearing, that is considered an oath? Talmud lomar l'chol asher yevate ha'odem b'shvua. The inclusionary expression would include, therefore, gomar belibo. But Hagufa Kashya, this source, as it is inherently contradictory. Amris Bisfosayim Velobalev. You said uttered through your lips, not internal. Vahodar Amris Gomar Belibo Minayin. Then you say something concluded internally. From where do we know that it is binding? Omar Rav Sheshes Ha Lo Kashya. This, in and of itself, is not a question. Hachi Komar, the correct understanding is as follows. Bisfosayim velo shegomar belibo lehotzi bisfosa velo hotzi. A vow is that which is uttered to the exclusion of someone who internally committed himself to utter, to pronounce a vow and did not pronounce it. That would be excluded. Gomar belibo staminayin. Someone who internally concluded to swear, to accept, let's say, to accept as an oath, whatever, but didn't at that point say internally that he was going to utter it. From where do we know that this kind of, let's say, internalized oath is binding? Tamaloma l'chol asher yevate. So we have an inclusionary expression, Ela l'shmuel kashya. This now represents a problem for Shmuel. Shmuel said that only that which is verbalized is considered an oath, not something that's internally concluded. Omar Rav Sheshes, Tritz V'Ema Hochi. Let's reread the source thusly, in defense, of course, of Shmuel. Bisfosayim, velo shegomar belibo lahotzi pas chitin v'hotzi pas saorim. The expression Bisfosayim excludes from a shvua someone who concluded internally to utter wheat bread as the subject of his oath, and instead of uttering that, he ended up uttering pasorim, barley bread. That is not a vow. Gomar beliboi lahoitzi pas chitin vahoitzi pas stamina, and someone concluded that he's going to swear, let us say, not to eat that he concluded that he's going to utter, that he's going to verbalize an oath not to eat wheat bread. And when it came to his verbalizing, he said he swears not to eat bread, without mentioning wheat. From where do we know that this is a shvua, that this is binding? Talmud Lomar l'chol l'asher yevatei ha'adam. You notice that we dashed underlined v'hotzi. So what we see, what is included as a shvua, as a binding oath, is this situation where he had committed himself internally to utter a specific kind of bread and failed to utter the specific kind, but mentioned bread in general. However, the decision to accept upon oneself an oath without uttering it, that would not be binding. That's as far as Shmuel is concerned. And the source doesn't present any problem. Meisvei, we have another source. The background to the source is someone who vows to bring a sacrifice. And the Torah provides for people to bring voluntary offerings. The pasuk says, "Moises v'secha tishmor v'yosisa." The words that emanate from your mouth—that's moises v'secha, that which comes out of your mouth—you shall be sure to observe and fulfill. Ein li elo shehoitzi b'svasav. Here I see only that which is actually uttered. Gomar b'libo naim. From where do we know even that which is internally committed without being uttered? Talmud lomar kol nediv lev. Here you have a pasuk from what we call Meleches HaMishkan, from the building of the Mishkan. And it says, kol nediv lev. The word lev indicates heart. Even something that's internally, an internal commitment. Well, that's not like Shmuel. That's a problem. The Gemara responds, shiny hosim dichtiv kol nediv lev. That's different, because there the Torah makes a specific provision for an internal commitment. Question, v'nigmar minah, let us use the construction of the Mishkan as a precedent that internal commitments are binding all across the board, even regarding the realm of oaths that people take. The Gemara responds, Mishum dahavu truma v'kodshim shnei k'suvim haboim k'echod. The reason that we're not going to use the pasuk by the building of the Mishkan as a precedent is because of this well-known Talmudic rule that when you have two psukim that teach me the same principle, we say v'chol shnei k'suvim haboim k'echod ein melamdin. When you have two different topics that come to teach me the same principle, we say that that principle applies only in those two examples, those two topics, or those two examples, and not to the rest of the Torah. So, what is the reference to Truman Kochim? There happens to be a Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos on this, but we follow the Rashi Pshat. Truma v'Kochim, what does the word Truma mean? Trumas Meleches HaMishkan, the gifts, the donations made in the construction of the Mishkan. It says there, Ksiv bo kol nediv lev havio. V'gabi kochim, regarding sacrifice, Siv v'chizkio b'sefer divrei hayomim, v'chol nediv lev oilois. So you have the expression nediv lev repeated twice, once by the Mishkan construction and the other in the context of sacrifices. And we say that internal commitment, the non-verbalized commitment, will be binding only in those areas. That's the idea of Ein Melamdin, and we don't use that as a precedent for other areas, specifically oaths. The Gemara continues with a question. Ha ni cholama dama Ein Melamdin. The principle that we just said actually is the subject of a controversy. So that you can say that we're not going to learn that an internal commitment is binding according to the approach that says that two topics that have the same principle taught cannot serve as a precedent to other areas. but there is a divergent approach or a variant opinion that says that even when you have Shnei Ksuvim Boim Ke'echod, I can use that as a precedent for other areas. So if I'm going to do that, I'm going to be learning from Truman Kochin that Nediv Lev, that an internal commitment, is binding. And that would be the same in the case of someone who swears without verbalizing it. And that would be a problem for Shmuel. The Gemara responds, Havu Chulin v'Kotshim. V'Chulin mi'Kotshim lo gamrinon. Here, you have a different objection. And that is that the two psukim that were cited, from which we could have maybe established a precedent that internal commitments are binding, but those psukim are found in the realm of kutchim, the realm of the sanctified. We're talking about oaths. Someone swears to eat bread or swears not to eat bread. That's chulin, that's the realm of the mundane. And the Gemara reveals another rule, and that is that the realm of the mundane, chulin, mikotchim, from the realm of the sanctified, they're two different halachic realms, lo gamrinan. I can't learn or establish a precedent from one realm to the other, from the realm of the sanctified to the realm of the mundane. And therefore, Shmuel's rule that gomar belibo, tzorch shiotzi bisvosov, withstands all of the attempts to question it. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.